Support comes from Empower Missouri, which believes a criminal record shouldn't be a lifetime sentence of poverty. Empower Missouri is working to automate expungement of criminal records. More at empowermissouri.org.
LaDonna Applebaum has been a high-profile advocate to expand health care for quite some time. And the St. Louis County Democrat parlayed that passion into a successful campaign for the Missouri House of Representatives. Applebaum joins St. Louis Public Radio's Julie O'Donohue and Jacqueline Driscoll next on the latest edition of Politically Speaking. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
It's a little complicated in Bolivar because there is a Parsons family there.
But we also knew that it was important to make sure that we got to where we needed to go.
You know, if you walk in a room and you're getting ready to make a decision and everybody in the room looks like you, you need to stop.
And right now what happens in the United States Senate is as critical as anywhere else in the country.
I really want the state to succeed.
We want everybody to know that we're all working together.
I just worked hard to try to build my name where I didn't have the money.
Hello and welcome to Politically Speaking. This is Julie O'Donohue. I'm your host. I'm doing this interview with my co-host in Jefferson City,
Jacqueline Driscoll.
And we are here with Representative LaDonna Applebaum. Representative Applebaum, is it your first time on the program?
Yes, it is.
Oh, wow. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. So before we get started, can you tell me about the boundaries of your district?
Sure. The 71st District is Westport, Maryland Heights. We go from 141 to the Inner Belt, Olive North to Dorset, and Olive North to Lackland.
Okay, well, we're going to start out, because it's your very first time on the podcast, we're going to ask you a couple questions about, you know, your background. Can you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and when you initially got interested in politics?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, I was born in Harrison, Arkansas. My mom and my dad divorced when I was like 5 years old, and she remarried, and that moved me to Springfield, Missouri. And I lived there, through high school, and I never really thought that much about politics growing up. But once I turned 18, I started voting and started paying a little bit of attention. I went to school. I went to college at the University of Tulsa, or Tulsa University, the Hurricanes, which has never made sense to me. They call them the Hurricanes because they should be the tornadoes in that state. I got my degree in sports medicine / athletic training. And I really enjoyed the helping people get better. And that led me to working for a company in medical sales, doing orthopedic custom knee bracing and contracture bracing. And I really wanted to see people get better. Throughout that process, I started noticing how much we were charging for a custom knee brace or a custom back brace or contracture bracing. And I knew how much it cost for us to make those products. And I started realizing that I was part of the problem with our healthcare industry, that we were charging so much for a knee brace to Medicare. And I just didn't seem right. So I had to get out of
it. It was a lot more than maybe the cost of making the knee brace. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. What I'm saying is, like, we were billing Medicare, could be close to $2,000 for a knee brace that maybe only cost $30 or $40 to make. But, that's just the way it was. And, I made some decent money doing that. But, I think I was part of the problem. And one thing that I mention on a daily basis, that I do not believe that healthcare should be for profit.
You have said, it sounds like many times before, that you got active in politics because of your own healthcare issues. Can you talk a little bit about what those were and why that made you act, you know, get politically active or pushed you to run for office?
Yes. So in 2010, Tom and I found out that we were going to have a baby, and we were so excited. And so we were doing all of the things that you're supposed to do, you know, picking out names and taking your vitamins and all of that wonderful stuff. And I had health insurance. And I'd had that policy for at least, probably at least 6-7 years. And anyway, sadly, I miscarried. So went to the doctor, and the bills started coming to my home, and I'm like, what is this? And the insurance company said, you were not covered for pregnancy. And I'm like, how is that even possible? How do you provide an insurance policy to a female that can have a baby, possibly have a baby, maybe not want to have a baby, could have a baby, whatever. It doesn't matter. How can you provide an insurance policy and not cover? So I was aggravated. And knowing that, I started looking for an insurance policy that would cover. And there was plenty of them out there. But the kicker was they were going to charge me an additional $1,000 a month, $1,500 a month, and I would have to wait a year. And at that point in my life, I didn't have time to wait if I wanted to have a child. So I just got so aggravated with the system that I canceled our policy altogether, which was honestly not a smart thing to do, but I did not want to give this insurance industry, a for-profit company, any more of my money. And so sadly, Tom and I did not have health insurance for quite some time. And when President Obama started pushing the ACA, I got really, really excited about it for so many reasons, because, you know, women's health care was a big part of the ACA. And I lost during that time when we were going to healthcare rallies and being active. One of my friends, who was also an activist, she lost her life to breast cancer. And I was devastated because of the current, at the time, the current healthcare system that we had let her go, pushed her off of the type of health insurance that she had. And she couldn't even qualify for Medicaid or Medicare at the time. So it was really sad. So that really motivated me to become even more of an activist for healthcare. I don't know if I would have actually be doing this if it wasn't for my friend Melanie. I feel like I walk in the halls in Jefferson City with her name on my heart.
This is your friend that passed away from breast cancer?
Yes.
I know this is a painful topic, but do you feel like if she had had access to health insurance, she might still be here?
Yes, I do. I do. So trying to push for the ACA got me motivated. And then when I developed breast cancer myself, when the Supreme Court was hearing the ruling for King versus Burwell, where they were trying to decide if the subsidies were constitutional. And so I was actively supporting that. And I was actually going through chemotherapy at the time. And a group asked me to go to Jeff City and lobby for not only Medicaid expansion, but also, so you know, lobby for the ACA. And I was so happy to do that. Even though I wasn't feeling the greatest, I wanted people to know how important it was and that the ACA was taking care of me and that people need to have Medicaid expansion. And I went to a senator's office and told him that, hey, I'm making it. I'm going to survive this. I'm going to beat cancer because of the Affordable Care Act. And he looked at me and said that I didn't deserve to have the ACA. He said that to my face. I mean, I laugh about it because I'm like, did he even realize that I had chemotherapy just that day before and that I had a wig on that I was getting ready to like shove it in his face? It was very frustrating.
So you suffered a miscarriage. You sort of opted out of insurance because you were very upset. And it sounds like between that event and you getting breast cancer, your friend passed away from breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
right? Is that what motivated you to get on the ACA to join that healthcare exchange?
Well, I knew I needed health insurance regardless, no matter what, you know, so the fact that in 2014 that the ACA became law and it was affordable was a godsend. But there were so many things that brought me to the point of getting politically active. One is my husband's family has a deep roots in labor. And ironically, at our last family reunion, we sang the song Solidarity Forever. It's on video. It's on my website. So Tom's grandfather was one of the original organizers of the AFL-CIO back in the 1930s. So, yes, we are a huge labor family. And so that was another reason that I decided to get involved.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Medicaid program in Missouri. What's on deck for next year's legislative session? We've seen kids, we've seen people getting kicked off of Medicaid. What's on deck? How do we, you know, I know that there's this ballot initiative to expand Medicaid. Is that likely? What do you see as a lawmaker?
Well, I see an enormous push for Medicaid to be on the 2020 ballot, which is wonderful because I think us as a state, we've proven time and time again that we as a state, we're more progressive than what some people think we are, just like the fact that we passed medical marijuana, we passed Clean Missouri with 67% of the vote, and I think we will trend in that same fashion with Medicaid expansion.
So you believe that there's support from it from constituents? Is that what you're hearing in your district?
Yes. I started knocking on doors when session was over, and I had to take a little break because I had surgery myself on my foot, so I couldn't really knock on doors. But when I was able to, that is what's on people's mind is healthcare. They want healthcare that's quality and affordable, quality, affordable healthcare. And I would say 75 to 80% of the people that I talk to, if I bring up Medicaid expansion, absolutely want to see that happen because they want to see their brothers and sisters in the state being taken care of.
We are going to take a break to hear a message from our sponsor, and we'll be back with Representative Applebaum after this message.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on the Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back with Representative LaDonna Applebaum. I have a question because you're such a new legislator.
Okay.
What was like the most unexpected thing that about this experience about being in Jefferson City last session?
Well, I had been to Jefferson City a few times, but I had never really paid attention to what happens on the floor. I call it the opera. You never refer to someone on the floor by their actual name. You refer to them by the gentleman from St. Louis City or the gentle lady from Greene County. You never say Representative Clemens or Representative Smith or whatever. You call them by their county or the area that they live in. And the other thing that I call the opera on the floor is the way we introduce a bill or we introduce an amendment. There's a procedures for that. And I guess I just didn't really expect it to be so operatic, if that's a word.
One of the bills you sponsored would have required teachers and principals to complete 2 hours of suicide prevention each school year. I just wanted to hear a little bit more from you about why that bill was important to you.
I believe that we have a suicide epidemic among young people for several reasons, whether it's an opioid crisis or a gun epidemic, gun violence epidemic. But I just feel like that one of the reasons that I wanted to sponsor that bill is to help the children and help our families in Missouri. It's really, really sad that a child will turn to suicide. And if we have teachers and principals and people that work in our school system get educated on knowing the signs of what it looks like for someone to be depressed or sad or, you know, basically both, and notice those signs and be able to reach out to them and prevent that, I think it's so worth it. And I really hope that the school systems in the state of Missouri will recognize that. And hopefully I can get this bill heard.
Full disclosure, I was a former teacher, a former high school history teacher. A lot of my family members are teachers. My stepmom is currently a teacher, as well as both of my sisters. So I've heard it all in terms of what teachers are required to do. And I assume you probably ran into some of this when you were sponsoring the bill about more requirements for teachers. They already do so much. So why does that fall to the teachers and the principals? Is that because they see the kids every day, or why would this be a requirement for them?
Yeah, of course, it's like, you know, your school, when you go to school, your teachers and your principals and your counselors, they're almost like a second family, I would say, because they see you every day. They see you the same times every day. They're going to notice your habits, your patterns. And I feel like that is, you know, maybe even more so than a mom or a dad or a sister or brother. They see you with your friends and how you react. And so I think that is I think it's a responsibility. I mean, why wouldn't you want to take that on is the question I have for someone who may be reluctant. Why wouldn't you want to prevent a child from committing suicide?
Going back to some of the legislation that I saw that you'd sponsored, there was one that required DHSS to create rules consistent with the CDC for prescribing opioids. One of the things I found fascinating coming to Missouri was that there is no PDMP to monitor when doctors are prescribing opioids to people. Missouri, I believe, is the only state in the nation that doesn't have a PDMP. We've seen deaths surrounding opioids decline, but in Missouri, they are it is still increasing. What's next? Again, that was one of your bills. It didn't manage to go anywhere, but is this push for a PDMP still going to be present in the legislature next year? And how do you get more support for that?
And I would say the politically speaking audience is very well educated, but we might want to explain what a PDMP is.
Yes, I will be happy to. Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, that's what that stands for. And you're correct, we are the only state in the union that does not have a statewide prescription drug monitoring program. We have it in St. Louis County, in St. Louis City, Kansas City, Springfield, Missouri, and I also believe in Columbia, but it's some of the rural areas that do not have it, and that's the problem. People can go to a pharmacy and get opioids, and they can go to another pharmacy and get more, and they can sell them in the parking lot. So I really feel that Missouri can get this passed. I really feel like that we can. We did pass it in the House. It just did not pass in the Senate. And I feel that's sad, because the reason it didn't pass in the Senate is because they were concerned that people's guns would be taken away, which is another problem we have in the state. But I think if we can eliminate the thought that it's going to somehow affect people's gun ownership, that we can get it passed. We just need to get our, our senators better educated.
It seemed that a lot of lawmakers had concerns simply with another government list type situation, where people's names would be on a list that the federal government may have access to. Is that totally off base, or was that something that was heard throughout the session?
No, I agree with you. That's the reason it did not pass in the Senate. Just exactly what you said.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
Okay.
Because I haven't been there. I haven't seen a full session, so I was curious as to some of the reasoning behind it. But it's interesting to hear that.
Well, welcome to Jeff City.
Thank you.
Can you explain the connection between why people are drawing a connection between being on a list or opioid, tracking of opioid medication and gun ownership?
Me personally, I don't see the connection.
Right. I'm sorry. I'm asking you to articulate maybe some of the opposition.
I'm not in their minds. I honestly do not understand where they get that from. I almost feel like it's some type of conspiracy theory, possibly, that they would think that the two would be connected, where, helping the people in our state would somehow take their guns away. It does not make sense to me. But like I said, I'm not in their head.
As I remember, it's like if they end up on this list, this do not sell list that some people are concerned, then they're going to end up on a do not sell guns list. Is that right?
I think it's if you are taking certain medications, it's like a mental health issue, which we should be concerned with. Obviously, we should be concerned on who gets to purchase guns if they have mental health issues. But not every mental health issue should keep you from owning a gun. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but I play one on the radio. I'm just kidding.
So offline, you made an interesting comment about lobbying influence in Jefferson City. Can you talk about what impact you think lobbyists have in Jefferson City? And has that changed, you think, since Clean Missouri? I know you've only been through one session, so.
Yes, I've had one session, so I don't have anything to compare it to. But it feels like the lobbyists do not have the power that they may have had previously, before Clean Missouri was passed. And I'm happy with that. I feel good about that, because I don't want someone putting something over my head or over someone across the aisle's head on what's important. We should be doing it on what's right for Missouri and not what's in the special interest.
So you're on a committee that oversees health care issues.
Mm-hmm.
What type of interactions do you have with lobbyists on those issues?
I also sit on the insurance committee as well. So health and mental health in the insurance. I think probably more people have tried to talk me into supporting short-term insurance plans. That's probably been what more lobbyists have talked to me about than any other issue. And because of the insurance plan that I had when I miscarried, it was so similar that I cannot support the short-term insurance policies. Just cannot do it.
Can you explain what a short-term insurance policy is?
I wish I could.
Maybe that's part of the problem.
It is. It's part of the problem. Short-term insurance policies basically are catastrophic coverage. Basically, if you have a heart attack while you're driving down the road, you can go to the hospital and you'll get taken care of. But if you have a short-term insurance policy and you find out you're pregnant, no, you're not covered. So that's scary because people think, oh, I've got insurance. You know, I'm taken care of. And that's not the fact.
Representative, what are you working on and in anticipation of the next session? Do you know what types of legislation you're going to introduce or what issues you might be involved with?
Well, a hot topic right now for me is for the environment. I'm really concerned about what's happening with Mother Earth in our, what's happening globally. It's scary, but all things considered, we can do things locally, all the way up to federally, to make changes in our environment. And I want to give a shout out to Edwardsville, Illinois, for what they're doing. Just so simply with plastic bags and paper bags, they're going to tax them. It's so easy just to go to the grocery store with your own reusable bags. And so if I could do anything in the legislature in 2020, it would be to stiffen penalties for people that litter. It's a big pet peeve of mine. So I would like to, like people throwing stuff out of their windows, especially cigarette butts. Really, really, I think we should have a fine for that.
Representative Applebaum, where can people find you on the World Wide Web?
At LaDonnaForMissouri.com.
Gotcha. Do you have a Twitter handle?
Oh, geez, I don't tweet, but my legislative assistant does for me. But no, don't find me on Twitter.
Okay, fair enough.
I have a Facebook page, LaDonna for Missouri.
Okay, I'm Julie O'Donohue, and you can find me on Twitter at JS O'Donohue. Where can we find you, Jacqueline?
Driscoll NPR.
You can read our stories at stlpublicradio.org. Thanks so much.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.